Good afternoon, everyone. This is Senator Tim Carney. I want to thank you for calling in and participating in this telephone town hall on COVID-19. Now remember, if you'd like to ask a question at any time during the presentation, just press *3. So I'm going to be blunt. Things are not looking good. This virus never went away, but we are seeing the worst surge yet. Pennsylvania is seeing between 6,000 and 7,000 new cases a day, and that's worse than what we saw in March and April. Delaware County in particular is doing poorly. We currently have a positivity rate of 9.9%, which is higher than the state average. We are quickly closing in on 10,000 deaths from COVID-19 in Pennsylvania, and 69 in the last 2 days. This is serious stuff. Now, I know we've heard progress about vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, and actually today from AstraZeneca, but we need to keep this in mind. Distribution of a vaccine will be months away, and it will be staggered. Today, I had a call with Governor Wolf and Secretary Levine, who said frontline workers would be given priority for a vaccine, and that the general public would be given fair and equitable access. Until that happens, we need to do all that we can do to stay safe and to stop the spread. We're facing a big test of stopping the spread this week with Thanksgiving. So if you take away one thing today, let it be this. The safest way to celebrate Thanksgiving this year is staying home with the people who live with you. The alternative is not worth it. 256,000 Americans have lost their lives to this virus, and thousands are fighting for their lives in hospitals. Many families will be sitting around that table with an empty chair this year. So keep your celebrations small and smart. I know how difficult this is. COVID-19 has redefined our lives in lots of painful ways. But the sooner we get our act together, the sooner this will be over. Tonight, I'm joined by a great group of guests who will share important information on how to stay safe. On the line, we have Dr. Monica Taylor, the Vice Chair of Delaware County Council. We have Rosemary Hall, a health policy consultant for Delaware County. And we have Dr. Livernese from the Mainline Health. The four of us will do our best to answer any questions you might have. If you'd like to ask a question at any time, press *3 on your phone. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Monica Taylor. Dr. Taylor?
Good afternoon. I'm Monica Taylor, Vice Chair of Delaware County Council. Thank you, Senator Carney, for hosting this telephone town hall. It's important that residents understand the seriousness of the situation we are in, so they can make decisions that will protect themselves, their loved ones, and the community. There is an alarming high spike in COVID-19 cases across the country, and even more alarming is the ways in which our county is being impacted. COVID-19 cases in Delaware County have been rising. Last week, we exceeded the highest number of outbreaks since the height of the pandemic. At the height of the pandemic, there were 232 cases a day. Last week, we exceeded that number. On November 18th, Delaware County reported 287 cases, and our most recent 7-day incidence rate has doubled, with our percent positivity increasing from 6.4% to almost 10.5% in the last 3 weeks. We are now back to COVID-19 being community spread in our county. The recent spike in cases has resulted in Delaware County hospitals having to divert patients, longer than normal wait times in emergency rooms, and first responders and essential healthcare workers being greatly impacted, affecting their ability to assist, care for, and treat residents. Beginning a few weeks ago, Delaware County hospitals were forced to divert patients because they had reached capacity and or did not have enough essential healthcare workers to treat patients. There are more COVID-19 cases resulting in more people needing to be hospitalized, and essential healthcare workers are among those testing positive, resulting in a shortage of healthcare workers available to treat patients. We are seeing spikes in our first responder community as well. 911 dispatchers, police officers, firefighters, and EMS workers are experiencing outbreaks. There are multiple factors that are attributed to the increase. Public health investigators are linking a majority of cases to social gatherings at homes, people not wearing a mask in public, people returning to in-person work and large events such as weddings and funerals. Some cases are also being linked to children participating in extracurricular activities. We are asking you to take a hard look at the activities you are engaging in and ask yourself if it's really the responsible thing to do. Your decisions affect our whole community. Your decisions affect our first responder community and healthcare workers who are responding to the outbreak. It affects our schools and businesses who may be forced to shut down if our numbers continue to rise. Delaware County has taken immediate steps to do our part in response to the increase in cases. The county will launch communications campaigns to stress and encourage the behaviors that help contain the transmission of the COVID-19 virus throughout the community. The county has recently approved an agreement with Visit Delco to promote the safe support of businesses during the holiday season, and many county departments have or will return to primarily hybrid and reduced in-person staffing models. Some services will only be provided virtually or on an appointment-only basis. The number of in-person meetings will also be minimized at the county. During our November 18th public meeting, Council voted 4-1 to pass a resolution requesting the Governor Wolf and the Pennsylvania Department of Health enact additional COVID-19 mitigation strategies in Delaware County in particular. As many of you know, Delaware County does not have an Act 315 health department and must rely on the PA Department of Health to enact mitigation strategies in the county. In response to the resolution, the Secretary of Pennsylvania Department of Health ordered the following mitigation efforts. Individuals in bars, restaurants, and other retail food establishments must wear masks except when actually eating or drinking. Bars, restaurants, and other retail food establishments must limit the number of individuals at a table to 4, and gatherings of 10 people indoors are 10 or more than 10 people, indoors are prohibited in Delaware County. The order took effect on November 21st and will remain in effect until January 2nd, 2021. Along with the recent mitigation efforts, Delaware County has also provided financial assistance to public schools to support remote instruction and return to in-person instruction, along with financial assistance to our nonprofit agencies and local businesses. This is to help them help support those businesses in continued operation through the Delco Strong programs. For child care facilities, we have provided PPE and have entered into agreement with the Child Care Professionals Network to provide financial assistance to economically qualifying families in need of child care services. The county is also providing flu vaccination and COVID-19 testing services through intercommunity health in cooperation with community health and community health care providers and the Chester County Health Department. And these are just a few of the efforts that we are trying to put in place to help our residents and our community respond to COVID-19. So thank you very much, and that was pretty much our update from the county.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. Now for a public health perspective, let's go to Rosemarie Hall.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with everyone today. So what's on everybody's mind right now, of course, is the holidays, Thanksgiving and our upcoming winter holidays. So I just want to begin today by some reminders. So we want to make sure that if this year possible to celebrate virtually or with people at least in your immediate household. If you do plan to celebrate with people outside your household, please take steps to make your holiday safer. Anytime you're near people you don't live with, wear a mask when you're not eating or drinking. Wash your hands often with soap and water and stay at least 6 feet apart from others. Consider if those around you may be at higher risk of severe illness for COVID-19, such as older adults or those with certain medical conditions, and take extra precautions of gathering indoors by improving ventilation, such as opening windows and doors or running indoor HEPA filters, those types of things. But the safest limit is in-person holidays, is gatherings is to only the people you live with, as I said, and try to keep the visits short. Gatherings that last longer pose more risk than shorter gatherings. If you try to host virtual, be creative. You know, we were thinking of dropping off dessert to the grandparents and then calling them up or doing a Zoom with them to share dessert together. You know, try different things that are your family traditions and just think of them in different ways. There is more information on the Chester County Health Department and Delaware County websites on holiday guidance, and I recommend you look at those for more information. I've asked to clarify from a public health standpoint on some guidance. Recently, the Secretary of Health issued an order requiring anyone who visits from another state to have a negative COVID-19 test within 72 hours prior to entering the Commonwealth. If someone cannot get a test or chooses not to, they must quarantine for 14 days upon arrival in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's visiting other states are required to have a negative COVID-19 test within 72 hours prior to the return to the Commonwealth or to quarantine for 14 days upon return to Pennsylvania. This does not apply to people who commute to and from the state or who are seeking medical treatment. The order has taken effect as of Friday, November 20th. In addition, there was additional measures taken today. There's targeted mitigation measures announced, which include the new measures include revamped commitment by schools to protect students and staff, targeted protections for businesses and gatherings, and a new enforcement plan that includes liability protection for business enforcing the Secretary of Health strengthened masking order and an advisory encouraging Pennsylvanians to stay at home. There is also a reminder that if our healthcare systems, as Dr. Taylor pointed out, particularly in Delaware County, are compromised, it is only COVID patients who will suffer. Care will suffer for every patient, including those who need emergency care for illnesses, accidents, or chronic conditions unrelated to COVID. There is additional information on these mitigation on the Pennsylvania Department of Health website. I also wanted to update you today on testing, which is on everybody's mind. COVID testing is once again becoming difficult to obtain, and the county has held various walk-up drive and drive-through events across the county. Most recently, the county hosted testing with Latino Connection and the PA Department of Health in Upland and Upper Darby. And Delaware County will begin a winter COVID-19 testing and continued flu vaccinations on November 30th. A county-round testing site will be held in Upland, and this will be open to all residents with a priority given to essential workers, such as childcare, school staff, first responders, and critical infrastructure. With the reminder that the best people to get testing are those who have been a known exposure to COVID-19. Or have symptoms. Our COVID testing sites are open for people 12 years of age and older. More information can be found on the Delaware County website. We're also working on our mobile testing ability, and we will be launching that in the beginning of December, and we hope to be visiting several community areas that are in higher need as a quick response. And again, that information will be shared by your municipality and on the Delaware County website. In mid-December, we are planning to do a joint effort with AMI and the Pennsylvania Department of Health for a large 5-day COVID testing. And we will have more information about that, and that will be an additional 2,000 tests available to the county. Delaware County, as we said, does not yet have a county health department, but we have been able to leverage resources with the help of Chester County Health Department and the PA Department of Health to offer additional testing capacity. Delaware County also has many private testing locations, including pharmacies, urgent care facilities, and health system locations, and we encourage you to check our website for additional information on those locations. And I just want to briefly cover what is happening around the COVID-19 vaccine as we all are anxiously awaiting its release. So basically from a county perspective, in conjunction with the Chester County Health Department and the Pennsylvania Department of Health, along with the CDC, we are actively engaged in planning for the vaccine distribution. As mentioned by Senator Kearney, it would be a phased approach with the phase 1A and B focusing on healthcare workers, first responders, and some long-term care facilities. The distribution will be coordinated by local and state officials with direct transport of vaccines from the manufacturer due to the specialized cold chain storage of the vaccine. Phase 2 and Phase 3 of the vaccine distribution may involve more direct county involvement in the vaccine distribution, as hopefully we will be able to obtain a vaccine that has easier cold chain storage, and that we will be able to use county resources for that vaccination. So similar to what we might be doing for our flu clinics, we will most likely have drive-through type processes for the vaccine in the later stages, which looks like later in 2021. Delaware County has had several meetings with county organizations and healthcare facilities in the planning and distribution phase. Those will continue regularly. And we will be following the guidance of the Chester County Health Department, who is in charge of the COVID-19 response in Delaware County, on specifics about additional planning. So that's all I have right now, and I'm sure there's probably lots of questions, so I'll turn it back to Senator Kearney.
Thank you, Rosemary. Thanks for that information. We're going to go take a couple questions now. Remember, if you'd like to ask a question, just press star 3 on your phone, and you'll be able to get a question into the queue. Right now, let's go to Amber in Millbourne. Hi, Amber, are you there?
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hi, you're on with Senator Kearney. How can we help you?
Okay. I was just wondering, because you were saying about the spike, do they have any information on testing versus the additional cases? Because testing wasn't so widespread in the early onset. So are they testing more? Is that why the cases are up because of that?
No, actually, so when we, and one of the things you probably heard about is us talking about testing positivity rate. So it's a rate. So it takes into account the number of tests given, positive and negative. And so that rate has been, so it's a rated. And so we've been using that same rate from the beginning. And so although there might be more people being tested, we are still seeing an increase in the rate of people that are testing positive. So for example, right now we're at 10%. For every 10 tests that we're giving, one person is positive, and that's what those rates mean. So it's actually, we are seeing a significant increase in positivity in the county and across the nation. I hope that answers it in a way.
Okay, yes. And then my second question was about the number of deaths. Is it for people with pre-existing conditions or people that are they are already in the hospital for certain things? I mean, what?
Sure.
Because that's the way the death rate was, or the deaths were before. Has that changed, or is it the same, or?
So what we're saying, so in the beginning, what we saw, because we did such a good job in some ways in doing our lockdown, what we saw was that many of the deaths were contained to, hospitals and long-term care facilities, because they were first the sickest people. And then there were lots of other things in the beginning that we didn't have access to, like personal protective equipment and wide-scale testing. That would have helped us with those strategies in those facilities. So unfortunately, we did have higher rates of people over the age of 65 having, in Delaware County in particularly, having adverse consequences of morbidity and mortality. And so that's deaths and sickness. However, we are seeing now with this recent surge that we're seeing it across the board in the community. So we are seeing more people in their 40s and 50s being admitted to the hospital. We're seeing some younger people getting very sick. There have been younger people die, just not at the same rate as some of the older people. And then people with pre-existing conditions are definitely having more adverse effects. So people with diabetes, obesity, other underlying immunocompromised patients are much more susceptible. So as this spreads through the community, we will start to see, and we have started to see, of course, older people being impacted, but we are seeing a mixture of people dying. And, the big concern right now is the people who are coming into the hospital, initially we were seeing, you know, that they were being admitted to the hospital and our ICU beds weren't filling up, and now we're starting to see the ICU beds filling up again.
Okay, thanks, Rosemary. Thanks, Amber, for that question. Now let's try Carol in Springfield. Hi, Carol.
Hi, hello, and thank you for taking my questions. I have two of them. The first one is the testing that would be a nasal swab as opposed to a throat swab. What is the difference in the result? Is one more accurate than the other? And is there a difference in cost?
So there's actually a couple pieces to that. So I'm going to start without getting too wonky because I tend to get wonky. We will start with what we call our PCR nasal swab test. Right? So right now, that's kind of what we consider their gold standard. And that's the test that we do go up into the nasal cavity. There's two types of those tests, and usually there's a full nasal swab. It goes all the way up. That's the thing that makes people's eyes water. And then there's a mid-nasal cavity swab. So those two swabs have had good results. We are seeing not as many false negatives with those tests. And so we consider that a good test. But we are, so that's the first test. And that's the one that has to go to a lab. There's the other test that is the antigen test. And the antigen test is what a lot of people are seeing in like urgent care facilities and some hospitals, and that's considered like a rapid antigen. And we are using those in the long-term care facilities as well. And there are two ways that people are doing the rapid antigen. One is using the mucosal swab, the mouth swab, or the nasal swab. The key with the antigen test and where it makes the difference is they work best in actually detecting active cases if the person is symptomatic, where it's been 5 to 7 days since the person has been exposed to a known positive. Now, we do use some of this in general screening and surveillance in some situations, but the test itself works best when there's actual what we call viral load. There's enough of the virus to be detected. As far as cost, most insurance companies are supposed to be covering at least one of the tests. It's at least one time if you're getting the test. Now, we are seeing some of the insurance companies pushing back on multiple tests. And if you are paying for it, there's a wide range of costs. I've seen up to $140 for a PCR test to about $65 to $75 for an antigen test. So I hope that answers all your questions.
Yes, thank you. My second question would be, if someone feels that they've had a significant exposure, what is the protocol for that person if they are working in a long-term care setting?
The long-term care settings have specific guidance from the Pennsylvania Department of Health as far as how they are doing testing of residents and staff. And so each of them have their own protocol, but they are have to submit those to the state, and it has to be within the guidelines. So I just wanted to say that initially. And so there should be regular testing in a long-term care facility of staff members. If they are symptomatic, they should not be reporting to work.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Carol, for calling in. And thank you, Rosemary, for the answers. Now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Larry Livernese from Mainline Health.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate the invitation to join you this evening. You know, I'm the chairman of medicine for the Mainline Health System and also an infectious disease physician. So I'm both involved in the treatment of patients with COVID, but also planning for my health system's process to deal with this latest surge. In our system, like all health systems, our goal is to take care of patients who are infected, but also to protect our staff and members of the community and try to stop the spread of infection as we move forward. as has been mentioned, we are in the middle of a second surge that is accelerating at a frighteningly rapid rate and really stressing the resources of our hospital systems and our communities in general. Yeah. As opposed to the spring, I think we have some advantages this time around. I think we understand how this is spread. We have better access to PPE. We know how to stop the spread of this. We have better access to testing, as mentioned previously, is much more widespread. And we better understand how to provide support and treatment for our patients. And going back to the question that was asked earlier about whether widespread testing is showing up, identifying more cases, there's no question about that. But as Ms. Holt alluded to earlier, if you look at all the statistics, there's no question that what is happening now is actually much more severe than what we're seeing in the spring and taking off at a much faster rate. You know, on the horizon, we have some promising treatments. They're experimental, but a number of them are out there and are showing us some hope in terms of caring for our patients. And as mentioned, a number of vaccines are in trials, and several have been in the news the past week. I would point out to you that generally it takes between 5 and 10 years to bring a vaccine from the beginning of development to actually the bedside where we can give it to a patient. The fastest vaccine that was ever developed, and it was felt to be a miraculous event, was the mumps vaccine, and that took 4 years. Here we are less than a year into this event, and we have several vaccines that the FDA is looking at to see if they'll be effective for us. Most of the information we have about the vaccines comes from press releases from the drug companies that have developed them, and so there's still a lot of information we need to evaluate these and understand if they are safe and are going to be effective, and the FDA is in the process of doing that for at least two of them at this time. But other people besides the FDA are going to be involved in that process, and I am confident as we go through that process, we'll know at the end of it whether they are safe and whether they are effective. And despite the rapidity of this process, no corners are being cut or should be cut in terms of making sure that these are safe vaccines to administer to our patients and to ourselves, quite frankly. So I'm looking forward to and hopeful about the vaccines, but more work needs to be done as we analyze those. And I would just like to go back to where we started with this. As a physician and as doctors and nurses, we can treat people with COVID, but none of us can actually prevent you from getting COVID. Only you can do that. And you've heard very good advice from Dr. Taylor and Ms. Holt in regard to the things that you can do. And I won't repeat them right now. You've heard them on the news. But I would emphasize to you that you have the power in your hands to protect yourselves and those around you. And I would strongly encourage you to follow those recommendations. And I will stop there, and we'll allow more questions.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Thanks for that exhortation. It really is up to us to try to get through this, and it sounds hokey sometimes, but we really are in this together, and our individual actions affect everybody else in our society. Remember, if you'd like to ask a question at any time, press star 3. And with that, let's go to John. John McEwen is calling us from Pennsylvania. John, are you there?
Thank you. Yes, I'm here, Senator. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a senior. I had COVID in September, and I received a letter from Chester County and spoke to them. And my question is, am I susceptible to catching it again? I've had it once, and I'm feeling fine, and I had the temperature, and I've had a lot of the tiredness and the taste, and it lasted a good month with me, but I never had a breathing problem. But the one question I have is am I susceptible to getting this again?
Larry, you want to take that one?
Senator, yeah, I wasn't sure if you want me to jump in on that. Yeah. That's a really great question, and we don't have a completely firm answer on that yet. The question you're asking is whether you're immune after becoming infected. It appears, from what we're seeing so far, the CDC tells us it appears that within the first 3 months afterwards, we're not seeing very many second infections in people. What we don't know, though, is if you could still acquire the infection and transmit it to other people. So though your risk may be somewhat lower, it still doesn't mean you can behave differently, that it's safe for you to go out and become exposed or potentially expose other individuals. My personal guess is we probably do develop some partial immunity for a period of time after infection with this, but we don't really know the answer to that for sure at this point in time.
The second question that goes along with that is that when I spoke to Chester County and I was concerned, I was going to a dentist, and they said it would be okay after 14 days. And the question is that they take my temperature, which was fine, and they asked me about 10 different questions, which every one of them I said no to because I wasn't. They said, well, you tested in the last 2 weeks. I said, no, I wasn't. I was tested prior. And, you know, they accepted me, and I had no problems. Is that okay for me to now? I'm just concerned. I don't want to be passing anything on to anybody else. I'm feeling fine. I'm 83. I'm a senior. I'm feeling fine. Is it okay for me to go to in-person doctor visits, a dentist visit?
You know, it sounds like your dentist followed the standard protocol. We feel that people, by 14 days after their symptoms begin with COVID, if they are clinically better and no longer having fever, we consider them no longer to be contagious. And that's why they asked you all those screening questions, to make sure you actually had that clinical improvement and it would be safe for you to go into that environment and have the medical work you needed to have done, performed.
So as long as I can answer all those questions, then I'm
right. Okay.
Like I said, I want to make sure that I'm trying to stay on the safe side both ways for people I'm going to and myself, that it's okay for me to go as long as I'm answering no to everything and I don't have a fever and I don't have any symptoms.
Yeah, that's exactly correct.
Hey,
okay.
John, one other part of your question was about going to get your flu shot.
I didn't get my flu shot yet, and I didn't know whether my immune system was strong enough to take another flu or not. That's what I was worried about.
You absolutely should get your flu shot. If you feel you've recovered from this, there's no reason to delay getting a flu shot. And quite frankly, you will help all yourself and all of us by getting that and not spreading influenza. If we see a big outbreak of influenza on top of COVID, it will overwhelm our healthcare system. We really need to work hard to try to avoid a big flu season. And one thing we can do to help that is by getting the immunization and by wearing our masks and doing all the other physical distancing things we talked about.
Believe me, I'm doing it, doing all those after having it. And, it's just that I wasn't sure whether my immune system would be weakened because of COVID. But thank you for clearing that. I'll make sure that I line myself up for a flu shot.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, John. And please stay safe out there. Next, let's go to Nancy in Broomall. Nancy, are you there?
Yes, I am. My question was this. How soon after you think you may have been exposed would your symptoms appear?
Rosemary, you want to take that one?
Sure. So it can be anywhere from 2 to 14 days from exposure.
Okay.
Right now, on average, I would say we're seeing it about 5 to 7 days is when most people start to show some symptoms. But it could be anywhere in that range. That's why we have the 14 days. On average, it's around 5 to 7 days that we start to see people with symptoms. But we have seen them anywhere from 2 to 14 days.
Oh, okay. The reason being, I was at a private funeral, my sister-in-law, and make a long story short, we social distanced. I was away. Matter of fact, I didn't stay for anything. I made my visit. I got out. But after I left, as I'm leaving, my niece comes up to me and hugs me. And I look, I jump back. But anyway, that's a different issue. But one of the people that was at the funeral, she developed an upper respiratory infection, and she's been fighting it now with a lot of different symptoms. And she's been to the doctor, but not tested for COVID yet. She'll be tested on Wednesday, supposedly, at Delaware County Hospital. But I feel bad for her. And then it prayed. I have not been anywhere, and we're not going anywhere for Thanksgiving. But it's been praying on my mind, thinking, well, touch wood, I feel fine. But, you know, God forbid if she had it, what would be the timeline from that day? And I kind of thought it was 14 days, but I wasn't sure, you know.
Right. So just to be safe, if you were in close contact of less than 6 feet to that person, then yes, you should, you know, and she might be a possible case, that an abundance of caution, the 14 days would be a good benchmark.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I haven't been in contact with anyone, and I've been home. There's no reason. I'm a senior myself. There's no reason to be out. But the fact remains, I feel bad for this person, you know, and I don't know.
Sure.
The doctor told her that it was upper respiratory, but it still is in your mind because you hear so much and you wonder, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I would also recommend, you know, just monitor your own symptoms. You know, so you're looking for, you know, your fever, loss of taste and smell, you know, respiratory symptoms, any of the changes that everybody has seen a million times and been asked.
Right.
And we do have additional guidance. I was just going to say, if you have any other questions, lots of information on the Chester County Health Department website under COVID. We have a lot of, like, frequently asked questions.
Chester County. Oh, okay, because I'm Delaware County,
yeah,
and I know we didn't have.
So Chester County is taking care of Delaware County. It's also on the Delaware County website. There's a link.
Okay. And do you know the difference between those temporal thermometers and whatever? Do they seem to run high on people, or is it just whatever, I guess, you normally, you know, they never read 98.6. They always read like 99 or whatever.
I'm going to leave the doctor to talk about the differences in temperatures.
I know. It's just a weird thing.
Dr. LaVerne, do you want to take that?
Yeah. Generally, your skin temperature is actually lower than your oral temperature.
Okay. All right. Well, then that's weird.
Maybe by a degree or so, sir.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then, because, I mean, that temporal thing that I take, and it's been like this for years, I always read like 99.4 or something. I never read 98.6. And when I go to the doctor, I don't have a temperature, but with this crazy thing, it tells me I do. So I don't know. Well, maybe I better get an oral one then.
Yeah, and each person's baseline temperature is a little different. You may be somebody who tends to run on the higher side, and if you're consistently at the same number, I wouldn't be alarmed just by that.
Oh, okay. I am consistently at that number, so it's, you know, within that range. Okay. All right, I really appreciate your help. You've been very kind. It's the first time I ever really listened in on something like this. I think it was very informative. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for joining us. Let's go to Joan in Springfield. Joan, are you there? Joan? Okay. And let's try Vicki from Chester County. Vicki, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. I'm in Malvern, and I am not a computer person. And if I wanted to be tested, just proactively to be tested to be certain that I'm healthy with Thanksgiving coming up, how do I do that if you're not a computer person? I called my local CVS. In fact, I called several, and they all say I have to do it on the computer, but I'm not a computer person. How and where can I get tested? I am a senior, number one, and I am immune compromised because of rheumatoid arthritis.
So one of the things that you could do is LabCorp and Quest. You're not on the computer, but if you call Delaware County Intercommunity Health, and they can give you the information on testing locations, including what the county is going to be doing starting November 30th. But I would caution you, just because we're really encouraging, there's such an over demand for testing right now, that we're really encouraging those who have been a known exposure to a positive person or have symptoms to be the one to go get tested right now for COVID. The testing, unless you really have to travel, the testing for travel is just it's overwhelming, the system right now, and you can't get any appointments. And I don't know if Mainline Health has any, but we have been reports that nearly all of the testing is at capacity. And if you don't have to get tested, if you don't have symptoms or you're not known exposure, you know, I would recommend holding off on the testing. But you can order a test kit from, you can get a mail-in test to, so you can request a test from LabCorpQuest, and they would send it to your home, and you can do an in-home test yourself using a nasal swab, and it gives you directions, and you can just mail that back. Right now, testing for a lot of the testing sites in Delaware County, the results are taking about 4 to 5 days.
Okay. As I said, I'm in Chester County in Malvern. You said I could call, what did you say, the Delaware County?
So if you're in Chester County, you can call the Chester County Health Department, and they will give you a list of the testing sites in your area if you can't access them from your primary care physician.
And
the Chester County Health Department website, and this applies for Delaware County and Chester County. The phone number is 610-344-6225, and the phone is operating 8:30 to 4:30 Monday to Friday. And again, that's 610-344-6225.
Okay, thank you. So if I called them, I would get information. My second question is, people who now are contracting the illness, I'm sorry, how are they being treated? Are they being treated with, are they being treated with the steroids and remdesivir and whatever things, for example, that President Trump was given, or how are they being treated now, the people who are hospitalized?
So for people who are acutely ill with COVID, there are a number of different therapies that are available. The remdesivir is actually approved. There are another number of other things that are available under emergency authorization through the FDA. The remdesivir that you mentioned is an agent that actually directly kills the virus. Steroids is used for people who are more severely ill in the hospital, who are having trouble usually breathing and need extra oxygen, which seems to decrease inflammation and help them as well. And just recently, several antibodies, monoclonal antibodies, have been released that we can give patients, and those antibodies actually directly act against the virus and stop it from replicating in the body. Each of those is used at a different time for a different clinical situation. So most people are not getting all of those, but I would say that majority of people who are sick enough to be in the hospital are getting at least some of those things. And there are some therapies just coming out that are actually being used for outpatients as well, who are particularly people who are not sick enough to be in the hospital but are at very high risk.
Okay. And are those readily available for those who are ill and hospitalized, as you said?
The steroids and the remdesivir are currently widely available. The antibodies I mentioned are just starting to come out and are in limited supply at this time.
All right. Well, thank you very much. This has been very informative, especially for someone who is not a computer person. I can't just go to a website and find this information. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Vicki. Thanks for hanging with us. We're going to go to a question that came in online from Carly. With the increase of exposure, will the county mandate schools to go virtual until the first of the year? That's kind of like a million-dollar question. I'll tee it up for Dr. Taylor maybe to answer that one, but I'll just say that the county doesn't really have that much of a say in that. It's really the individual school districts who seem to be in control. Dr. Taylor?
Yes, so I'll second what you have just said. The county, as we said earlier, the county doesn't have a health department, and as you see, looking at what Montgomery County has initiated for the school district, that was done through their health department and their board of health. We don't have that authority in Delaware County, and also for our school district, it falls upon each individual school district's school board to make that decision, or the governor. So the governor could also release more guidance towards the school districts, which he actually has done today. And So those are kind of the areas that, or at least the avenues that we have to go about working with our school districts. We kind of work with them individually as each individual school district and each school board, because each one has different issues that they would be combating in terms of having school and having it safely. And as you've seen across the board, we have 15 school districts, and all 15 are kind of on a different schedule comparatively. And that's pretty much where we are right now. As we move forward, we'll see what the governor comes out with as, with improved mitigations as we go through the holiday season, and as we see what happens with our case count and our incidence rate and our percent positivity as a county.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Taylor. We are, on the state level, definitely seeing that. You know, this everything is kind of a moving target, because a lot of it just depends on how we as citizens react and do our part to try to keep everybody else safe. So let's go to Julia in Broomall. Julia, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all the work you're doing to help our county. I have a home at the Jersey Shore. My husband and I, because we are follow direction, did not go to our home in the spring when we were in lockdown, despite hearing many of our friends doing that. Now we're in another situation where we're not supposed to be leaving the state without coming back and quarantining. Are we allowed to go to our home and winterize our home without coming back to quarantine?
How about Rosemary? You want to take that one?
So you can go, you know, again, if you don't quarantine, they're going to recommend you have a COVID test. And so within, you know, 72 hours of, before you come back, I understand you're just going from one point to the other. I think, you know, you have to, that's the official order. And they're asking us to abide by that. Now, you know, it's whether the enforcement of that is becoming, will be up to the state, but that is the recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. Thanks for that call. Let's go to Upper Darby to our old friend, Pastor Nate Goodson. Nate, you there? Nate? Okay, I guess we lost Nate. His question was about, is there any, the county plan on making remote sites for COVID testing and also sites for the flu shot? And I think Rosemary can handle that one, because I think the county's really done a great job on that. Rosemary?
Yep, so starting November 30th, we'll be having we're going to be opening our winter testing and flu vaccination sites. So the first one will be in Upland, and that will be an ongoing permanent site through the winter. We're going to have at least 3 days of COVID testing and 2 days of flu vaccinations. And you can access that at the Intercommunity Health Department, and it'll be drive-up. And so it'll be a drive-up flu clinic or a drive-up COVID testing. We do recommend that you make a appointment. And you can either call the Department of Intercommunity Health or go online and make that appointment. The site is up this week for the Upland. We are also working with Mercy Health System, and Mercy will be doing, they are doing some flu vaccinations for the county, as well as COVID vaccine testing that, again, begins November 30th. And it will be by appointment, and you can access that, again, at the Department of Intercommunity Health and on the website. We will also be having additional testing throughout the county, and we're working with the Pennsylvania Department of Health for mid-December testing, and we'll have more additional information about that. That will be a week-long testing. We'll be able to do about 2,000 tests. And we are doing ongoing vaccinations. We'll be having our mobile unit hopefully going around soon. We just purchased an RV, and so we'll be going around doing mobile testing and flu vaccinations in certain communities. So look for our updates in the press releases and on our website. And finally, our big news, January 15th, we will have a permanent site in Yaden, and we will be having ongoing COVID testing, flu vaccinations, and keeping our fingers crossed that that will include COVID vaccinations as well.
Wonderful. Thank you, Rosemary.
That's it.
Great. Mm-hmm. I think the county's been doing a wonderful job with that. Let's go to Marie Smith in Drexel Hill. Marie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Marie. What's your question?
My son was to the doctor's for a checkup and had blood work done, and the doctor informed him that he had antibodies and he must have had the virus at some point, and he couldn't give the virus to anyone and he couldn't contract it. Do you know how true this is? Because he's supposed to come for Thanksgiving.
We're going to let Larry handle that one. Dr. Lebanese?
So I'll start off by saying antibody testing is very tricky. And the tests are still being developed. I think over 150 have been approved under emergency usage by the FDA. And when tests are approved that way, the pre-release work on them is rather minimal. The presence of an antibody, if the test is done correctly, suggests your son has been exposed to COVID, but it's in no way predicts whether he is immune.
I would
caution you and very severely not to let him think that he is somehow immune to this. We do not have a test that demonstrates immunity at this time. We are hoping for that test, and that would be a breakthrough for us. This test does not tell him that he is safe. He needs to take all the same precautions as everybody else.
See, his family doctor told him that.
I'm not sure what his family doctor said, but I can tell you I'm very confident in telling you that he is not immune at this point in time. We do not have that information.
And is it possible that you have it and you don't even know it? Is that the systematic?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's very common, not just with COVID, but with many infections. For many common infections we get and either have minimal symptoms or no symptoms at all, and later on we can do a blood test and say, oh, you had Epstein-Barr virus or mononucleosis, and the patient says, I was never sick a day in my life. And we'll say, well, you definitely have had a response to it.
Oh, that makes it hard, too, when you don't even know you were exposed.
Well, that's one of the problems we face with COVID and why you hear us all saying everybody, whether you feel sick or not, must wear a mask and distance themselves from other people, because it can be spread by people who have no symptoms at all.
Well, he worked in a pharmacy, and both of the pharmacists had it. One had no symptoms, and the other one was out for a while. And they gave him 3 days off as quarantine. And that was all.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's me too.
Tell them to be careful and to keep safe, please.
Okay. Thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
Okay,
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Let's pop over to Paoli and talk to Helen. Helen, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call. What I would like to know is how is the contact tracing the system going with contact tracing? Are people actually cooperating, and how does it work?
It's a great question, and let's let Rosemary answer that one. Rosemary?
Sure. So right now, there's two things that we do. There's case investigation and contact tracing. So if you're a confirmed positive, you will have a case investigation, and if you live in Delaware County or Chester County, that will be done by Chester County Health Department. So that is going to continue no matter what. But right now, we are in widespread community spread. And so contact tracing is what we do for all the contacts of that positive. We are not able to keep up with the significant number of contacts. So we're still doing contact tracing. But what we're asking is for all of our positives that are working with our case investigators, for them to notify the potential contacts that they've come in contact with and let them know. And we have the information that we share with them. But we are continuing contact tracing for certain groups. And they are those over the age of 65 and people particularly in our congregate care, long-term care facilities, and higher risk people we are doing a more extensive contact tracing. And for those under the age of 18, our school-age children, and that is really to assist in making sure that the schools can try to stay open if they're able to, and also because those that age group may also be asymptomatic carriers, that they don't need to present it in some cases with a severe disease, and so they aren't easily detected without knowing that they're a contact. But we are continuing to do the best we can in contact tracing. We are hiring more contact tracers. And every day that is updated, or once a week, I'm sorry, is updated on the Chester County Health Department website on our Green Face report. And it actually lists how many people we've done contact tracing for, as well as the common risk factors that we've seen in contact tracing.
Thank you so much. And may I just say, I'm a retired nurse, and I really, really appreciate everything that you're doing. If I was physically well enough, I would be out there volunteering, but unfortunately I can't. But thank you again so much.
Well, thank you for your call, Helen. And you know, one thing, if you do get a call from somebody who's trying to do contact tracing, please, please, please cooperate. Because the more information we have that gets put into the system, the better off we'll all be. And I would also encourage everybody there's a phone app that the state health State Department of Health has out now, which is a great thing, a coronavirus check-in, where basically it just creates this network of information that helps keep us all safe. So there's information about that that's on my website, which is senatorcarney.com. We have time for one more call. If you're on the line, you didn't get a chance to ask your question, please hang on. You can leave a voicemail for us, and we will promise to get back to you with the answer to the question. So let's go talk to Pat in Upper Providence. Pat, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
My question has to do with the tracing. I'm wondering, with the tracing, are you able to find hot spots in Delaware County that we should be aware of so people stay away from them?
So that's a great question, and it falls into the line with what County Council was trying to do with our additional mitigation strategies that they asked the Governor's Office and Secretary Levine to implement. So what we're seeing primarily in contact tracing is that it's the larger type events that are a problem. So I'll use the schools as a small example. So we're not seeing cases within the schools, like transmission within a classroom or person to person so much in the schools, because they're doing all the right things in the schools. But it's events associated with it, like kids having a big sleepover or a party after one of a football game. Those types of things, it's the bigger events that have been our major spreaders. And that would also apply to other types of events, such as weddings or showers, birthday parties, those types of things. And right now, because we are in such community spread, we really have to go down in Delaware County to recommending that our indoor guidance for events is less than 10 people.
Right. Well, very good. I do have that COVID app on my phone, which is really very nice. It gives you all the information on numbers in your own township. And, you know, you can find that anytime. Just hit your app and there it is. So
it's great.
Thank you for using it.
Yeah, I enjoy it. So there is a problem going to food stores and drug stores then, because they're not popping up as an issue.
So you want to be careful about your exposure in those locations, for sure.
Right.
But, you know, if you are careful and try and be 6 feet apart while you're there, make sure you're wearing your mask, using hand sanitizer. You know, you don't want to spend 2 hours in the grocery store. But if you're going in and doing that and, being careful about what you're doing in checkout and being around other people, it's not a huge risk, but it is a risk. So if you're in a high-risk population, you may want to think about having your groceries delivered or having your pharmacy needs delivered. just as an extra precaution. But, and there are also many of those locations are offering special times for other people who have higher risk issues, so you can check your local store to see what those times are.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Rosemary, for that. I know there were several questions about schools we didn't quite get to, but just remember that we have local control of our school district. So where the health department may make recommendations, it's up to the individual school districts or the archdiocese in the case of Catholic schools that are the control with that. So I want to thank everybody for participating in our town hall tonight, especially our guests, Dr. Monica Taylor, Rosemary Holt, and Dr. Larry Livernais. They're all incredibly busy these days, and really do appreciate them taking time out of their very busy schedules to be with us today. I think we got a lot of great information today. I hope that everyone has a smart and happy and safe Thanksgiving. Remember to keep your celebration small and smart. Wear a mask. Keep your distance with your public. Wash your hands. We'll get through this, but only if we all do our part. Again, if you did not get a chance to ask your question, you can remain on the line, and you'll be able to leave your question as a voicemail for me, and we will get back to you. So thanks again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office at 610-544-6120 or visit my website at senatorcarney.com. Thanks again. Have a safe Thanksgiving. Have a great evening. Good night.